Circular Views, podcast series on circular economy by WBCSD. Hello and welcome to Circular Views. My name is Brendan Edgerton and I'll be your host for this series of podcasts. On today's podcast, we take the time to sit down and discuss with the world's key players in the circular economy and look at the actions taken by pioneering companies. I'm delighted to be joined by Cordula Mock-Nobuck, Director of Renewables and Sustainability at BASF, Devin Giles, Manager of Renewable Solutions at International Paper, and Tina Persula, Vice President, Sustainability, Packaging Material Division at Stora Enso. Welcome to you all. We'll be discussing the circular bioeconomy and why it is relevant for business and capitalizing on its economic opportunity and environmental benefits. Let me start with the first question to all of you. Why is the circular bioeconomy material to your business? Let's start with you, Devin.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. I'm going to start off by giving a little bit of background on International Paper, because I think that that really explains why the circular bioeconomy is material to our business. International Paper is one of the leading global producers of renewable-based packaging, pulp, and paper products, which means our company produces packaging products, boxes that arrive on your doorstep, pulp for paper, or pulp for diapers, tissue, and personal hygiene products, as well as paper. Our entire business depends on sustainability, the sustainability of forests because of this. So fiber, a renewable resource, is our primary raw material, which really means that the use of biological renewable resources, as well as ensuring the regeneration of those resources, is critical to our business. So, you know, in terms of what that means to International Paper as a whole, we've sort of built our foundation of our sustainability as a business, as well as, you know, the economics of our business around this, you know, biological renewable resource and the regeneration. And our Vision 2030 goals, which are sort of our sustainability vision and our vision for the future, are sort of the foundation of that. Sustaining forests is the foundation of our business, and it really sort of helps to guide the things that, and actions that we do. The products that we make, we see them as being sort of the sustainable solutions to our customers. They're alternatives to, you know, non-renewable or you know, more impactful products, and sort of going beyond the basics of the foundation of those products and the resources that are used to create them. Our products are very easily recyclable and sort of participate in this whole circular bioeconomy. So the entire foundation of the business, the forest products industry, is really sort of founded in that notion of the circular bioeconomy, circular manufacturing systems, and then, you know, the circular system down to the end of the customer, end of use of the product, or recovery and recycling of the product.
That's great. Thank you, Devin. Cordula, why is the circular bioeconomy material to your business?
Yeah, thanks, Brendan. And actually, I think I also start by giving a big background on BASF. Yeah, we are a large chemical company. And of course, traditionally, the raw materials that we have been using in the past are fossil fuels. So let me give you a bit of an explanation on how we understand circular economy and also how we will support the transition from a linear fossil-based economy into a circular economy. So first, circular economy. Yeah, we really say that the aim of a circular economy is to avoid waste, reuse products, and to recover resources. And by this, we can decouple economic growth from resource consumption. And in that way, we are then able to increase human well-being and at the same time stay within the limits of the planet. Or to say it in other words, our aim is to conserve our planet's limited resources and use them as efficiently as possible. And actually, in some ways, this is what BASF has been doing already for quite a long time. Just to give you one example, we organize our production in a so-called Verbund concept. And that means that at one side, we have a lot of different plants and they are all connected to each other. And this then really enables the efficient use of byproducts that are produced in one plant at the neighboring plant. So we avoid a lot of waste through this Verbund concept. However, to be honest, in general, many of the traditional value chains of the chemical industry and also of BASF, together with its customer industries, many of them are still designed along the linear value chain approach. And now to drive the transformation from such a linear to a circular business model, we have launched a new circular economy program that was actually end of last year. And within this program, we have set ourselves an ambitious goal. By the year 2030, we aim to double our sales generated with solutions for the circular economy to 17 billion euros. So that's the new target we gave ourselves. And there's actually three action areas behind by which we want to achieve these sales of 17 billion euro. The first one is that we will continuously increase our share of recycled and renewable raw materials. And of course, it's to be renewable raw materials from sustainable sources. Second part is that we'll consider recycling already at the design stage of materials. And we will be working on developing or closing new product-specific material cycles, meaning really thinking about how, when our products come back after the use at the end consumer, how we can take them back into our production. And last but not least, we are developing business models in which digitalization helps to conserve resources. And the first action area, which I just mentioned, I mean, this concerned the increased use of circular feedstock like recycled and renewable raw materials. So our understanding of circular bioeconomy is exactly fitting to this. We want to increase the use of renewable raw materials in value chains, as renewable raw materials are circular by nature. And at the same time, we will also consider how to design the material itself and the whole value chain in such a way that products produced from renewable raw materials can be kept in use as long as possible, and that material cycles can be closed again. So in this way, the circular bioeconomy is really at the heart of our strategy at BASF, and we are sure it will support us in reaching our goal of 17 billion euro sales with solutions for the circular economy.
Thank you, Cordula. And Tina, why is the circular bioeconomy material to Stora Enso?
Thank you, Brendan. So Stora Enso is a leading global provider of renewable solutions in packaging, biomaterials, wooden construction, and paper. So we develop and produce solutions based on wood and biomass for a range of industries and applications worldwide. And we support our customers in meeting demand for renewable, eco-friendly products. In many cases, our products provide a low-carbon alternative to products made from fossil-based or other non-renewable resources and materials. So at Stora Enso, our business, as it's based on bio-based raw materials, wood and wood fibers, it's regenerative by nature, and circular bioeconomy is therefore very material to our business. Because with circularity, we can make sure that we maximize the value creation from use of bio-based materials. And for us, circular bioeconomy means using the raw material efficiently and also leveraging full potential of side products and delivering products that can be reused or recycled over several cycles. So that's really the essence of circular bioeconomy. With recycling, we can increase raw material supply. But also, efficient use of raw materials reduces costs, and circular solutions create new business and value to our customers and society. So the positive impacts are manifold. And for us, circular bioeconomy is realized really in customer and value chain cooperation. Innovating and co-creating in partnerships enables us to close the loops for renewable bio-based materials. And that's also an important means of providing value to our customers and to the society at large. One example is how we collaborate with our customers and value chain on circularity. Our collaboration delivers solutions to further drive recycling of fiber-based packaging and also solutions to replace plastics. But with collaboration on developing new circularity solutions and services, we can also contribute towards a shift to carbon neutral society.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tina, and appreciate the examples there. Devin, coming back to you, you know, recognizing International Paper's role in the paper and packaging industry, how does the growth in the circular bioeconomy impact the uptake of fiber-based packaging solutions?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, the very basis, products being made from renewable resources, that's obviously foundational. And if we look at the growth of this bioeconomy, where the use and creation of products from renewable resources is preferred over non-renewables, then that can impact an increase in the uptake of fiber-based packaging solutions. When we think about our packaging solutions at IP being attractive in the growth of the circular bioeconomy, there's the component of the product, the raw materials being used, and then there's also the use of the product itself, right? The recyclability of it, what we do as the manufacturer of the product, making the fiber-based packaging themselves recyclable. And there's also whether or not it's actually recycled at the end of its life. From our side of things, we're already pretty circular. Almost all of our packaging products are recyclable, and we are working to close that small gap there to ensure that all of our packaging products are recyclable. In terms of the actual recovery of fiber-based packaging, it is one of the highest recovered materials, and recycled fiber is a large part of our system already. So if we can continue to increase the amount of fiber packaging that is recycled, the amount of fiber that's recovered in a high-quality manner, then we can increase the full circle of the product and the solutions that those products can offer to this bioeconomy. The other aspect of it, this is that we want to be able to give customers fiber-based solutions. And a lot of that means that we're innovating and looking at different alternatives and the ways in which fiber-based packaging can provide the same solution that a less sustainable or a fossil fuel-based alternative might be able to provide. So that takes a lot of innovation, working directly with customers to figure out what the issues are and, you know, what the sustainable alternatives that our fiber packaging can provide them to offer this lower carbon sustainable solution that is recyclable and easily recycled. So putting it back into this system of fiber recycling and recovery over time is really key, and it takes a bit of a reframing. It's really a dual part system, but fiber-based packaging already being such a staple of the packaging world, there is a lot of potential there and a lot of innovation that could provide more renewable solutions and continue to contribute to the circular bioeconomy.
That's great. I appreciate you making the distinction between recyclability and going that next level and looking at actual recovery too. That's very important. Tina, Stora Enso provides renewable solutions across multiple industries. Hoping you can give me some examples of innovative fiber-based alternatives for markets in which the forest sector doesn't typically sell.
Yes, sure. So one example is lignin. And previously, lignin has been used as a source of bioenergy in the pulp mills. Stora Enso is developing a technology that uses lignin to manufacture a graphite replacement material for the needs of consumer electronics and the automotive industry, among others. So to satisfy the increasing demand from e-mobility and electronics, Stora Enso is investing in the Sunila mill plant, which is already producing 50,000 tons of kraft lignin annually and making it the largest facility of its kind globally. These lignin-based graphite replacements, they not only gain a sustainability advantage, but they also help in improving battery performance to enable more effective solutions for batteries. And this supports the penetration of sustainable energy solutions. And a key really in using renewable energy in mobility and other markets going forward. So this lignin example, it taps into a large material fraction that was previously burned for energy and is now providing for added value products. And there's many other examples. So wood fibers can, for example, provide sustainable raw material alternative for textiles production and thereby replace textile fibers with higher environmental footprint. And another concrete example is recycled minerals from our production. which can be utilized, for example, in soil stabilization in infrastructure projects. And then again, organic sludge fractions from our production can be utilized in soil improvement in agriculture. So very many different end uses, and there's a lot of innovations in new end uses and also within packaging. Renewable fiber-based packaging can be introduced to new areas and end uses when we innovate and design with our customers and value chain.
Thanks, Tina. That is certainly a wide range of industries that you're feeding into there. Cordula, back to you. From BASF, the company's found a way to produce vitamin B2, an essential micronutrient for humans and animals, but by using a fungus-based system instead of a chemical synthesis one. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, certainly. And actually, the vitamin B2, I think this is a nice example of the bioeconomy, as here the chemical industry really has been using renewable feedstock from the very beginning. So already many decades ago, when vitamin B2 was produced the first time commercially, it was already produced from sugar. But actually, the synthesis that was used originally from sugar, that was really a lot of different synthesis steps. So the overall yield wasn't that high. And also some agents that were required, like amalgam, yeah, they are toxic. So there was a good reason to look for a better, more sustainable way to produce this vitamin. First attempts there have already been made in the 1940s, but it really took quite some time. And then eventually, yeah, Merck, they were the first ones to start a so-called fermentative production. And that means instead of using chemical transformation in a fermentative production, you're using biotechnology. Yeah, you're basically using biological organisms like bacteria or fungi, and they can make the transformation. And this is something that is especially useful if you start from a renewable raw material and then want to turn this renewable raw material into a chemical that is also something that is produced by nature. Yeah, then it's quite a good idea to think about whether you can use the transformation that biological organisms that they can do for yourself. So BASF also looked into how can we use this fermentative production, this biological transformation. And in the end, in 1990, we were able to really start the commercial production of vitamin B2 via this biotechnological transformation. Actually, at the beginning, we had both processes, the chemical one and the biotechnological one, running in parallel. But eventually, we stopped the chemical one because the other one was much more efficient. Actually, one reason for really taking the decision has been to do a so-called life cycle analysis, really look into different categories of the ecological consequences of the production process. And we could surely say that this biotechnological transformation, it decreases the greenhouse gas emissions by 30%, it reduces the use of hazardous substances, and at the same time, it also saves costs. About 40% are saved. Yeah, and basically, slowly after BASF changed to the biotechnological transformation, also other companies changed. And in the end, nowadays, really everybody in the world uses this biotechnological transformation to produce vitamin B2. And this more efficient production then also really enabled the growth of the whole market for vitamin B2. And in a way, this is an example which has led to a number of further chemical industry products which are now produced from renewable raw materials through a biotechnological pathway. And other examples here, for example, are human milk oligosaccharides. They are used for infant milk, or enzymes. You might know them from washing powders. This is one of the applications. Flavors, or also ingredients for crop protection. These are just few examples of a broad range of complex chemicals which are nowadays produced from renewable raw materials in a biotechnological transformation.
Thank you, Cordula. That's a great example of the transition happening in real time. So we could begin to see how all three of these examples show how the circular bioeconomy can bring sustainable solutions to businesses. That said, the circular bioeconomy can be difficult to implement as the use of biological resources may introduce sustainability trade-offs. Tina, what are some of these trade-offs you encountered at Stora Enso, and how did the company overcome them, especially when it comes to biomaterials?
Well, for circular bioeconomy and for recycling and circularity of all materials, actually, efficient logistics chains and also optimization of the material collection streams are especially important. And that's an important lever to minimize possible sustainability trade-offs of circular bioeconomy. This is as we need to ensure that secondary materials remain as clean as possible and their functional properties are not reduced so that they can really deliver the full value of the material for the next cycles. And that's, of course, a value chain collaboration again, that we need to make sure that the collection, sorting and recycling full chains are as efficient as possible and optimized in order to keep and recover the value of the renewable secondary materials. So with clean and well-sorted materials, we can enable utilization of full potential in recycling and also reduce pressure on the virgin resources. Another important aspect to consider is that the virgin resources are also needed in circular economy to keep the material properties at required level. And for virgin and all resources, actually, it's important to ensure sustainable and traceable raw material chain. And for this, third-party certification systems are a really important tool that we use, in addition to direct engagement with suppliers and whole value chain. And also here, the value chain collaboration is really the key. And another important tool and lever here that I want to raise is quite practical holistic sustainability assessment tools like life cycle assessment, which can inform the business decisions along the chain. And also these sustainability assessment tools are best used together with suppliers and customers. And by doing that, with use of circular, sustainably sourced bio-based materials, we really help society to shift towards carbon neutrality.
Thanks, Tina. Cordula, same question to you. What are some of the trade-offs you've faced implementing circular bioeconomy solutions in your sector?
Yeah, I think one aspect here I can only add to what Tina already said, that it's really important to work together also with other actors which are active in the same value chains, talk to your suppliers, talk to your customers. An example here is the palm oil, yeah, which we source from Southeast Asia. And here BASF has been one of the early members of the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil Production. So you can really change the way renewable raw materials are manufactured if you sit together, if you talk to the suppliers and build up new value chains. So we have now committed to sourcing 100% renewable palm oil from sustainable resources only. And this has been made possible by being a party to this roundtable. But apart from such aspects, I think it's also important to really check whether a new production process based on renewable raw materials is really sustainable and is more sustainable than a fossil-based one. And for this, we like to use the life cycle analysis, which I already mentioned before. And pretty often we see that actually greenhouse gas emissions, yes, of course, they are reduced by using renewable raw materials, but there could be other aspects which are influenced in the other direction. For example, eutrophication, if you take a renewable raw material from agricultural origin, you need fertilizer, and this might lead to adverse effects as far as eutrophication are concerned. And this is one reason for, number one, really looking closely at everything you are doing, but number two, also thinking about where can you use second generation renewable raw materials. Not virgin materials, but waste or byproducts. And how can we enable that we use them as well in our production processes? And one approach that we have developed is the so-called biomass balance approach. Here we make use of our existing Verbund system, and into this production Verbund system we feed the alternative renewable feedstocks like bio-naphtha or biomethane. Yeah, and the idea here is that the bio-naphtha and the biomethane is actually produced from waste. Bio-naphtha is something that is produced from pulp and paper industry byproducts, or also from waste like used cooking oil. It is refined by companies, and they then produce the bio-naphtha, which we can feed into our Verbund. Similar to the biogas. This can be produced, for example, from sewage sludge or other agricultural waste. It is transformed by digestion into the biogas. And if this is then purified to biomethane, we can use it in the chemical industry just like normal natural gas. Yeah, so this enables us to make use of such waste-based bio feedstocks. And in the end, what we then do is we feed in the feedstock, and then we calculate along our own production value chain how much feedstock has to be substituted to have a certain product produced in a green way. It's the similar way that you do it for green electricity. Here you also use an allocation approach, that someone is feeding in green electricity into the grid, and he has to make sure that the amount is fed into the grid that you also use as a customer. And this is how we also do it for the biomass balance approach, and thereby enable to increase the use of secondary renewable raw materials.
Very good. Thank you, Cordula. And Devin, same question. Can you speak to the trade-offs you face in paper and packaging and how you start to overcome them?
Yeah, absolutely. I would also echo the same comments made around the value of partnerships and the real importance in working across the value chain to minimize trade-offs and ensure that products themselves are being, you know, reused, recycled, and recovered. From the international paper standpoint, being solely dependent on forests for our fiber products, for us, one of the main elements of this is really ensuring that our fiber procurement is as sustainable and regenerative as possible. I said earlier at International Paper, we talk about how our entire business depends on the sustainability of forests. And it's not just a phrase. You know, we've been around for 120 plus years. So for our company, if we weren't looking at and ensuring the healthy and productive use of forests and creating and ensuring healthy forest ecosystems, you know, we wouldn't be around as a company today. You know, using technology and techniques that exist today, we have an opportunity to really increase the visibility and traceability, you know, all the way down to the fiber, the exact fiber that's procured and goes to our mills to create our products, and really have the opportunity to ensure that there aren't any trade-offs, you know, that are occurring during that fiber procurement process. And there's sort of two elements that, you know, we find the best way to do that. From the side of, you know, using forest certifications, that's one great way for ensuring that our fiber is coming from forests that are being sustainably managed. But in the United States, there's a bit of a challenge on that front because a majority of the forest land, you know, is held by small private landowners. And there's some challenges to taking on, you know, the certification administration and the costs of small forest land. So we sort of focused in on this other element, you know, another way that we can ensure that we're procuring from sustainably managed forests by using technology to guide our fiber procurement and give more insight on non-certified land. So we developed a tool using GIS mapping technology called Forest View, which is an innovative mapping and due diligence system. The tool's due diligence system really guides our procurement decisions, and it gives us further insight into exactly what's occurring on that non-certified forest land that we're sourcing from. You know, it's really ensuring that our fiber procurement activities are enhancing or maintaining the environmental values, you know, of the forest that we're procuring from, and builds on our commitment to transparency in fiber sourcing. So really being able to go, deep down into the exact source on the map, identify any conservation actions that might need to occur, and, say, here, here are the things that we're tracking and looking at, and really using the new technology to be able to show the due diligence that's occurring. This is a really helpful tool for us to be able to further ensure that no negative impacts or trade-offs are occurring during our fiber procurement process. On the other side of things, in terms of working and make sure our products are both recyclable and recycled, working to minimize any of the trade-offs that might occur during the product's life. Again, the importance of partnerships and really working across the industry and throughout, our value chain plays a huge role in overcoming any hurdles that might occur. And the value of these partnerships really can't be understated. It's really essential to see any real progress.
Great. Well, thank you, Cordula, Devin, and Tina, for the practical insight on the circular bioeconomy you've shared with us. In addition to that, thank you for the expertise you continue to offer through Factor 10, our flagship circular economy project. I encourage all of our listeners to go to WBCSD.org to visit our circular bioeconomy page. There are a number of resources available there for free, including our CEO guide to the circular bioeconomy, case examples, and key sustainability principles to consider when evaluating circular bioeconomy solutions in your business. For more information, visit www.wbcsd.org. And don't forget to subscribe to the Circular Views podcast on iTunes. We look forward to you joining us again next time.